you believe assault is an act, not an adjective. Your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener. Because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The Two-Way Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live, right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
Good morning, everyone. How was everyone's Halloween? More importantly, how was your All Saints Day? Carrie, close your mic. So, let's see here. Did anybody see any really weird stuff going on over the weekend? Was everybody prepared just in case some bad guy happened to bust into your house and want to take a hold of you or your family members? Has anybody thought about that? How about thought about that during a busy holiday weekend? I got to tell you an interesting story. There is a guy in North Carolina who is a legislator, who is an anti-gun legislator. And he's the longest serving legislator in North Carolina. He was in the House for a while, then he's been in the Senate since 1969. He's been in there for 40 years. And I'm trying to find where I have the story in all of my notes as we go along. But he's been recognized as one of the top anti-gun politicians, Democrat, in North Carolina's modern history. Of a possible, I think it's 5 stars, he has 1 on gun rights. 1. You can only go further down than that to a 0. Well, they've been trying to keep it out of the story out of the papers, out of the national news, but it leaked out this last, I think it was Friday. And as it turns out, he had to use a gun to defend himself in his own home and shoot a bad guy. He hasn't really cared for all of the gun rights that he's done his very best to take away from you, the citizens of North Carolina. And I know there's a few of you listening today. However, what he has done is become a complete hypocrite, because he had his own handgun in his house, and when a bad guy broke in and threatened him, he shot the guy. How about that? Now, if that isn't a little bit of cherry on top of the icing of the hypocritical cupcake, I don't know what is. Especially coming out of the Democratic side, which is just, it seems incredibly hypocritical, the anti-gun people, because most of them, if they're anti-gun, have never in their lives ever actually had to defend themselves because they've never been the victim of a violent crime. Once they become the victim of a violent crime, generally they realize, wow, finally had a gun. And if they're hypocritical enough to actually have had a gun and use it, the question then becomes, are they going to change their voting habits when it comes to politicians? If this guy continues to vote anti-gun, even though he used a gun for his own self-defense, you know what that shows? It's good enough for me, but it's not for you. That's what it means. So it's going to be interesting to find out. During the break, I'm going to pull up the guy's name and actually read the story for you. I just wanted to warm you up just a little bit to the idea of the hypocrisy of not only the left, but also of politicians, which is really the big deal. So stay tuned. We're going to digest this story just a little bit. Maybe you've got some people like this in your state. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio.
Rule 1, assume it's loaded. Rule 2, don't point it at anything you're not willing to destroy. Rule 3, listen to the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes. 1-800-313-9443.
Okay, so here's this wonderful story. This is out of Tabor City, North Carolina. It says, a sheriff says a North Carolina state senator shot one of two intruders at its home, and hospital officials say the man is in fair condition. Multiple media outlets report that Columbus County Sheriff Chris Batten said that 74-year-old Senator R.C. Soles, S-O-L-E-S, of Tabor City, shot Kyle Blackburn late Sunday afternoon. Now, this is, this was back in August that it actually happened, but the story wasn't updated until October. Let's see, Batten says the shooting occurred when two men went to the senator's home and tried to kick in his front door. No charges have been filed. The sheriff's office said the State Bureau of Investigation was handling the case. A call to an emergency spokeswoman, to an agency spokeswoman, was not immediately returned. There was no answers at a number listed for Soles' home. The Democrat has been in the Senate for 32 years. He was in the House for 8 years before that, so since 1969. So I took this information because it came to me in an email titled something along the lines of hypocrite anti-gun North Carolina senator or something along that line. So I did some research on my own on R.C. Soles and looked at some of his voting record and where he gets his ranking when it comes to pro-gun or anti-gun. And that's where I found he had 1 of 5 stars. The guy has been the head of several anti-gun campaigns in the North Carolina Senate. So now he's up there saying, yo, we need to have restrictions on guns, restrictions on ammo, blah, da, 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 da. But this guy, who by trade is he's a criminal defense attorney and has had many issues at his own home when his clients aren't happy because evidently it would seem as though he's a pretty lousy attorney. He has enough clients that are pissed at him that he's had vandalism in his home, people knocking down his mailbox, little bits of vandalism and things going on. So, and this guy is the longest sitting North Carolina state politician there is. Practices law when he's not sitting in the North Carolina Senate, which I would doubt that they really sit for very long. They're probably similar to Nevada where they do, like a few months every other year or a couple of months a year or something like that. So he's got to make money somehow. Evidently, he's a lousy defense attorney, would be from the stories that I've read. Who knows? Maybe he does 1,000 clients a month and only 2 are pissed and he's a wonderful attorney. However, considering that that there's a bunch of young thugs that have gone to his house, according to the different stories that I pulled up on Saturday, he doesn't seem to be that great. Anyhow, he's always kept a handgun in his house for such occasion. Now, if he's going to keep a handgun in his house for such occasion that he feels that bad guys might be coming to bring him harm, why is it he thinks that you shouldn't be allowed to? You need to fear politicians that fear your guns. Because the entire rationale behind the Second Amendment is because of defending yourself against the government. And the government isn't just an entity. The government is made up of people. Many of those people are elected officials. You have your Second Amendment right to protect yourself and your rights from elected politicians, and then all of the people that they hire or appoint. Because that makes up the government, whether the government be a town council, a city municipality, something along the lines of city council and mayor, a county commission, your state representatives in the state house or the state senate, or the governor for that matter, and then finally up onto the federal level, and eventually on the international level. If we don't stop something, we're going to have to defend ourselves, be allowed to have guns to defend ourselves against the United Nations, or however that shakes out. Now, hopefully it won't come to that. Something, there's going to have to be a very soon and very, very timely and dramatic shift. I am not a fan of the United Nations. Really never have been. The only time the United Nations works is when we don't like something that someone else is doing somewhere else in the world, and we get the United Nations to offer sanctions against them. And once they disallow the sanctions, we go to the Security Council. The Security Council says, well, we're going to tell you that you can't do this, or else. Or else what? Or else. That just, you don't want to, we don't want to have to answer or what. Just leave it as, or else. So if they pass that, and then the or else comes around, and the current administration or regime that's in the Oval Office in this country wants to smack that person around, they figure, well, that or else means military action. We're going to take it upon ourselves because we're part of the UN. Why don't we just go smack them around? I have to say, UN's a huge pain in the U.S. backside. They're centered in New York. I remember Rudy Giuliani came out when he was in office, and he says, if we could collect on all the fines just from the parking tickets that have gone unpaid because of UN delegates, it would pay for the budget shortfall in all of New York for the next decade. I believe that was what he had come up with. They don't care. They've got some sort of diplomatic immunity, at least to some certain level, and certainly breaking traffic laws and parking laws in and around the area of the UN, one of the things they don't care about, and they know it. I'm not a fan of the abuse of diplomatic immunity. Not a fan at all. Hey, I can go there and do whatever I want. No. That's if you happen to get into something you're unaware of, we'll take care of it. Doesn't get seen like that. Give them an inch, they take a mile. Anyhow, the whole thing with the UN is the UN has groups that are organized. They are supported financially and politically by the United Nations for global gun control. And who is number one on the list? Who is the big kid on the block they want to knock down? Well, it's the United States. Because we have the Second Amendment. Now, they believe if there's some sort of treaty, it will overdo the Second Amendment, and they can do some international gun control oversought by an international organization here in the U.S. I have five words for you. Let me ask you if they mean anything, UN. From my cold, dead hands, does that mean anything to you? Does it? Because what that means is the Second Amendment protects my right, Bill Carnes' right, my personal right to keep and bear arms, and to use those arms in defense of myself. In addition to the Second Amendment to the Constitution of the United States, here in this great state of Nevada where I live, I also have a right in the state constitution that is clearly spelled out that says I have the right to keep and bear arms for defense. Specifically for defense. If someone comes to try and steal my property, I can defend it. If someone comes to violate my rights, I can defend them. So if anyone comes to try to take my guns, they're trying to do two things. Take away my right and take away my property. And I will defend both. I have a legal standing to do so, regardless of any sort of treaty that comes around, because my rights are secured in my state constitution. Regardless of what the federal constitution says, in my state constitution, I can defend those rights. So, if any one person or any group come to take my guns, I have my rights, I have my property, I will defend them. I'll defend them with lethal force. Straight simply, I will shoot any quote-unquote officials that would, under this banner, come to try to take my guns. So you may eventually get them from my cold dead hands, but you're going to be picking up the guns from many, many other people's cold dead hands and they're going to have been on your side of the oppression. If everyone understands their rights and where they come from, don't rely just on the Second Amendment to the Constitution at the federal level. Check to see what your individual state says in that Constitution. If it is inefficient, then lobby long and hard for as many sessions, as many years as it takes to get the freedom for the use of firearms to be kept. Keep ammunition in that particular portion of the Constitution and keep in there for defense as well in your state constitution. Just remember, your state is in effect its own small little nation. Does it actually operate that way in this day and age? It does not. But does it have a legal effect of such? In a manner of speaking, yes. Then also in a manner of speaking, no. Get your state constitutions up to date. That's going to be your homework. Go online, look up something along the lines of Pennsylvania state constitution, and then just do a search for arms, firearms, guns, something like that. Once you've got it up, just use Google and then find on this page arms, guns, firearms, whatever it is, and see what it says. And if there's anything interesting, email it to me. Let me know. I'll be back after the break.
You can have the alcohol and tobacco. Leave the firearms to us. Right now, live. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes.
Okay, so you know that you cannot trust an elected politician, especially someone at the federal level. If you get somebody in the House, you get somebody in the Senate, you know you cannot trust them. Everything they do, everything they say is not what's going on. It is cloaked. It is veiled. We know it. We expect it. So when they open their mouths, you know they're lying. To think anything else is an absolute farce. You're fooling yourselves. So, of course, Nancy Pelosi comes out just late last week, something about her ideas of this healthcare deal and how wonderful it is, right? And it's got all of this anti-gun garbage veiled underneath it in a healthcare bill. This is how trick-or-treat works in D.C. The Obama administration and its supporters are using every trick in the book to undermine the gun rights of the law-abiding American citizens. Speaker Pelosi's Halloween government healthcare bill announcement only underscores this reality. That was a statement made by John M. Snyder. Now, John M. Snyder, Shotgun News recently named Snyder the senior rights activist in Washington. He's a former NRA editor, and he's the director of the Citizens Committee, the Citizens Committee for the Right to Keep and Bear Arms, and manager of the Tellem Associates LLC, which I believe is a lobbying arm. I believe. The current attempt to take over the American healthcare system by ramming government controls through Congress, among other things, is a backdoor attempt to get after Americans' guns. Obama is trying to do an end run around the Second Amendment under the healthcare rubric. His National Institutes of Health already is positioning an adverse relationship between firearms and health. Pardon me. That was a quote from him. And Snyder continues, the government-controlled healthcare program sought by Obama, Senate Majority Leader Reid, and House Speaker Pelosi could be used by anti-gun government bureaucrats to deny health insurance coverage to citizens who possess firearms. Under plans currently being considered in Congress, people could be denied health coverage simply because they own guns. Bureaucrats could determine that gun ownership constitutes a health hazard. This would be a sleazy dictatorial backdoor attempt to force law-abiding American citizens to give up their guns. The anti-gun political elite? No, it cannot directly attack American gun rights. Gun ownership is too popular. 100 million Americans own 200 million rifles, shotguns, and handguns. Americans buy over 1 million firearms a month. Citizens have purchased 10 million since Obama became president. Public opinion polls show Americans are becoming less and less enchanted with gun control laws and more opposed to them. A recent Rasmussen Report survey indicated that 50% are opposed to stricter gun controls. Only 39% say stricter gun controls are needed. A Gallup poll finds a new low of 44% say laws on firearm sales should be stricter. That's down 5 points from last year and 34 points from the high of 78% in 1990 when the question was first asked. So, there's John Schneider. He is Gundean, G-U-N-D-E-A-N, at AOL.com. If you'd like to send him a thank you, an attaboy, nicely done. Those were quotes from him as were published. I don't even know. I think Reuters carried this story. Yes, it was Reuters. So we have somebody who's up there speaking the truth. Nicely done. Good job. The question is, can you actually get these scuzzballs in D.C. to listen to you? Now, I have to tell you, I am happy to see Harry Reid pushing this bag of turds of a health care reform through the Senate. Because he's already having an uphill climb when it comes to getting reelected in Nevada. Now, the last time we had a Democrat as the leader of their particular party in the Senate, it was the Senate Minority Leader, Tom Daschle. So the last leader of the Democratic Party in the Senate lost his reelection bid. He's now a lobbyist in D.C. I think he got hired out of the lobby, and I believe he has a position in the current Obama regime. I believe. Correct me if I'm wrong. But anyhow, he's still active. He's just no longer senator. He lost his reelection bid as the sitting minority leader. Harry Reid has the opportunity to be, I believe. I tried to do the history on this, and I wasn't able to get clear information. It was a difficult search. I believe he would be the first sitting Senate majority leader to lose a reelection bid. And the more he pushes this dirty, filthy, lousy, disgusting health care bill through the Senate, the more he's going to lose ground in Nevada and eventually his seat in the Senate. Thank God. We can only hope so. I'd almost rather elect just a straight-up communist that had no authority. Hopefully that would happen. Stay tuned, guys. More to come after the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, on 2A Radio.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Bill Carnes, 1-800-313-9443.
The least qualified organization on planet Earth to run anything dealing with finances is the United States government, specifically Capitol Hill, the House of Representatives and the Senate. The least financially responsible group of people in the history of the world. Now, Ronald Reagan said it once upon a time. He said, however much money the government gets, they can find a way to spend it. The problem has been overspending. Now, if you'll remember back in the latter portions of the Clinton administration, there was actually a budget surplus for a couple of years, meaning they were bringing in more money than they were letting out. Now, certainly, we had a lot less stuff going on in this country at that point in time. When Ron Paul was running for president, just a year ago, actually, by this time a year ago, he had been cut out of the media for a good 5 or 6 months. So let's say 18 months ago, he said, you know, if you look at this whole dynamic and you reduce federal spending to where it was just 10 years ago, actual where it was 10 years ago, we could do away with the IRS because we have enough income coming in from other sources. Now, just to give you an example of how convoluted the idea of anything the federal government puts together, how convoluted it is. Anyone familiar with the Department of Energy, formed during the Carter administration in 1977? Does anybody remember the sole purpose? I shouldn't say the sole purpose. The driving purpose for the Department of Energy. Why the Department of Energy was created. Does anyone know? Call me, 800-313-9443. I have the answer. I am hoping that someone will call me if they know. Now, please don't just sit there on Google and try and find out. If you know, let me know. Why did Carter insist on the creation of the Department of Energy? Okay? How many people are in it? Do we know? Do we have any idea? Well, actually, I can't even... Yeah, I guess I'm not that patient. Here's the deal. The Department of Energy was created specifically to reduce our dependency on foreign oil. Okay? That's why it was created. The Department of Energy was launched, created, to reduce our dependency on foreign oil. How have they done? It's been 32 years. How have they done? Anybody know? I'm thinking pretty lousy. Now, let's just give you an idea of some stuff. I have some statistics here. From 2003, so we're talking 6 years ago, they had 16,000 federal employees and 100,000 contractors. So 116,000 people with an annual spending budget rounded to $20 billion. Okay? And here's some of their assets. And again, this is 6 years ago. 26 laboratories, 4 power marketing administrations, 24 other facilities, and over 15,000 vehicles. And rounded to 20 billion, 19.8 was what their what they had in 2003. $20 billion, rounded figure. And for 32 years, they've been on this path. Have we reduced our dependence on foreign oil? The answer is no. Why? Because the people who control the oil in this country and in other countries have very, very, very deep pockets. Very deep pockets. Anybody watch the Speed Channel over the weekend? They had continuing coverage of the F1, the Formula One racing event. It was the season ender in Abu Dhabi, which is like a 300-and-something square mile island created in the Persian Gulf. And there was part of this this long stretch. Actually, it wasn't even that long of a stretch. There's part of this straightaway on the track. When, as you look at the cars coming towards a camera, it looks like there's a large building back there. And then when they panned away, you notice it wasn't a large building. It was an incredibly huge private yacht. It was the most elaborate track built with some unbelievable architecture around there. Now, the entire island and everything put on it, for the most part, came from profits from oil. So if they can afford to do all that, do you think they can afford to have basically everybody in Washington, D.C. in their pockets, for the most part, at least people that count? They don't have to have everybody. They just need to have like 70%, 80%. 70 to 80% of the people in D.C. have oil money in their pocket. That's pretty much blood money. Now, to reduce our dependency on foreign oil, we've got 116,000 employees and contractors spending what is now over $20 billion a year with over 15,000 vehicles and dozens of laboratories and other facilities. Now, when I first moved to Nevada, it was April of 1980. The Department of Energy had existed for 3 years on paper. The guy that lived across the street from me and up a couple of houses was my Boy Scout leader. I was in scouting when I moved to Vegas, before I moved here, and then when I got here I got into Boy Scouts, and this guy was one of the top guys at the Department of Energy. As a matter of fact, he was number two in the Department of Energy, running day-to-day operations out at the Nevada test site. Now, the Nevada test site is the place where they used to blow up all the nukes. They used to have all the atomic weapons tests, nuclear weapons tests out there. This organization had existed for about 3 years, a little less than that, actually, when I met the guy who lived across the street. And they had already, under their veil, taken over atomic nuclear testing out of the Nevada test site. They ran it. So in under 3 years, they're running the test site, and he'd been working out there for a couple years. That was one of their initial things. That's energy. Okay, here, we're going to give this to you. How are they looking to lessen our dependence on foreign oil? You know what would be fantastic? If we could figure out a way to have a nuclear-powered vehicle, we would never need to refuel it. Of course, there's safety issues, and there's all sort of political things to think about. And then people being able to actually have access to a small nuclear reactor. So, of course, it'll never happen. Just like completely eliminating guns from the world will never happen. Having a nuclear-powered vehicle will never happen. I'm just saying, imagine the possibilities if we had a vehicle that never had to be refueled and ran forever. And you could have the biggest, baddest stereo you wanted, pulling as many amps as you wanted to rock your way down the highway. I mean, so much bass thumping, you could probably put the car in neutral and the bass would push you down the highway. And you wouldn't need extra batteries in the car to run it or an extra big alternator. How about that? So, how does all this relate to guns? How does this rant, this comparison, this whole thing with the Department of Energy relate to guns? Well, the government, whenever they launch a program, it fails. Whenever they launch a program, it costs them way more money than what they thought. Way more money than what they actually tell us it's going to cost. Because they have no idea how to budget. They're not business people. And they refuse to learn from their own mistakes. They refuse to learn from their own failures. I know if using some cheesy-ass line on a woman when I meet her is a big failure. After trying that cheesy-ass line a time, or two or three, I realize, you know what? Don't ever utter that cheesy-ass line again, because it's not going to work. The government does not have that capacity. Congress does not have the capacity to do that. I think the last person in Washington, D.C. that understood this was probably Ronald Reagan, because he was one of the most critical speakers of the federal government. Now, if we allow the federal government to take over health care, not just pass a law that is ruling on health care, but to actually take it over. If they actually take health care over, what do you think is going to happen with that? And we're just saying going from history. Okay, just going from history. What do you think is going to happen? Well, it's going to fail. It's going to fail miserably. And it's going to cost us way, way more money than we ever thought. Additionally, it will, and I flat guarantee it, because it just happens in history, it will get into the deficit. Now, in the last 12 months, our deficit, which has come on in, I don't know, what, a couple hundred years, has doubled in 1 year. Doubled in a single year. It took us over 200 years to get as far as we did in debt. And it's doubled in the last year. Now, there used to be a law that prevented the government from spending more money than it had, which meant, in case of emergency, they needed to have a little bit of a slush fund in case there was a natural disaster or something, war something. And they needed to have immediate access to cash, something that passing a law, trying to find new taxes or whatever, tariffing something, whatever, they couldn't do. They needed money right this minute. And they didn't have time for passing something and then waiting for the money to trickle in. So actually, they had to have money off to the side. Well, now you have deficit spending. We don't have that kind of money. We're going to have the Federal Reserve print us up some. We're going to take loans off it or get it from China or, you know, who knows where else. We'll probably be borrowing money from Mexico soon, the rate we're going. Once we got into this deficit spending, we were done. The only way to stop this is to re-limit Congress to it being disallowed to have deficit spending. They cannot overspend the money that was coming in. And there'd have to be, I would imagine, it would be a good idea to have some sort of cap on the percentage of any sort of surplus allowed. You can't bring in $2 trillion and only spend $1 trillion of it. You can't bring in $2 trillion and only spend $1.5 trillion of it, because now you've got 25% of the money you're bringing in is more than you need. So, something like that. The thing is, in this healthcare bill, which is going to go down, it's going to be this, if it goes down, it's going to be this huge cost. It's going to get into everybody's life because, oh, you're going to have to do this by the government. I got to tell you, if anybody passes a law that says I have to have a certain type of health care in a certain way, I am going to be breaking the law, because I will not do it. I will not bow to my government servants. I will not do it. And if they somehow tell me, look, you need this sort of health care, and if you're going to participate in this mandatory thing, guns will risk your health coverage. So you have to get rid of them. My ass. I'll just go pay a doctor on my own. That's all. That's just the way it is. And I actually have some doctors as clients when it comes to gun training. So I'm pretty well taken care of. You know, I would suggest if something like this happens to anybody else out there as a professional trainer, get some doctors in some different areas that are good clients, treat them well, maybe a dentist or two, things like that. So on the occasion that you need a doctor for yourself or one of your family members, it's just a phone call away. They're going to try and get the guns in any way they possibly can. When you get a regime and everybody on Capitol Hill that's run by Democrats. It's just going to happen. Eventually, down the road, if we don't somehow reform or replace the Republican Party back to conservative principles, because they've lost it long ago, they're conservative only by grading on a curve. Truly conservative? No. If we don't get that back, eventually the Republicans are going to want the guns too. The reason being, they are in power. Forgetting all about the, you are our public servants. You do what we tell you to. You will vote the will of your constituents. Not on your own, not of the lobbyist. Well, it is such a brothel in Washington, D.C., the largest brothel known to man. Anybody with money can go in there and get whatever the hell they want. Because there's legal ways of paying all of these people off, donating to their fund and saying this is what we'd like. A number of bills that have gone through historically have been and will continue to be written by the leaders of industry that want to have a law passed to benefit them, not by their representatives. So it's all about business. It's all about being on the take, and it's just nothing but a bunch of political whores is what it is. And when they get enough money behind them, they get enough effort behind them, they're coming after your guns. Some of them are already on the warpath. You know Pelosi is. You know Schumer is. You know Boxer is. They're just looking for an opportunity to get something passed. Stay tuned, guys. More to come after the break.
Your right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443. Uncle Sam taught him to shoot maybe a little too well. Finger on the trigger, loaded.
Okay, so we're going to talk a little bit about the 2A Radio Defensive Handgun Course. You'll have defensive and tactical handguns. We're going to do it out here in Southern Nevada, somewhere around the Las Vegas area, sometime in March, which should be well after Christmas. It will not interrupt anything important like Super Bowl Sunday or Valentine's Day or Easter, and it will be enough time before the Second Amendment March that if you wanted to do both, you wouldn't be cramped on, okay, I'm gone this weekend, I'm gone 2 weeks after that. So I'm trying to plan it for a good time in March where it's reasonable weather here and not too close to any other major event going on, including any major events going on in Las Vegas that would otherwise have rooms all booked up. So I'm in the process of doing all the research to find just the right dates. It will be a 3-day course. And trust me when I tell you that the 3-day course that you're going to get with me and my staff is going to be as efficient as any 4- or 5-day course out there anywhere else. Because this is the honest-to-God meat and potatoes without a bunch of fluff, without a bunch of sale, without a bunch of ongoing, way-too-long lectures to reinforce the same point by saying it 7 different times. So, you're going to learn to be able to present a gun out, draw from a concealed holster, and engage up to 4 bad guys with efficiency. Well-placed shots, keep your guns running, clear any malfunctions, and be able to employ at least the ideals of tactics. 3 things now, clear of malfunctions. Marksmanship, which is actually hitting your intended target in the area you want to hit them, and tactics, which is your ability to not get shot in a gunfight. The first two, gun handling and marksmanship, are the absolute foundation. That is really what you're going to get. You'll be introduced to the idea of some of the tactics. You will get a basic bit of information with that. The reason we're going to go far into the tactics are you got to be able to crawl before you walk, walk before you run. And tactics are a walking and running sort of affair. This is a crawling to walking affair. No matter where you are on planet Earth, No matter what time of day it is, what season it is, doesn't matter. Your gun handling will always be the same. Same goes true for your marksmanship. You will still always use the same marksmanship fundamentals you're going to learn in this course to hit the target, regardless of time, place, or situation. The tactics, however, are what change and evolve. So this is going to be gun handling and marksmanship with the introduction into the ideals of tactics. For those of you who've been in martial arts, this will be your stance, how to throw a punch and block, actually how to fight, really begins to come later. I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you in Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule. Thanks for tuning in. I'll be back tomorrow.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will your freedoms? The Two-Way Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.